From memory, it was in late 1978 or early 1979 that I first read in the Sunday Times that Colin Welland was scripting a movie on Harold Abrams and Eric Little, gold medalists in the 1924 Paris Olympic Games. At that point, it bore a less than inspiring title and was called The Runners. Don't ask me how, but I somehow secured Colin's address, wrote to him offering my help, and within a week, he was sitting opposite me in my living room in St. Albans. It immediately became clear to me that Colin Welland was a sports nutter. Okay, perhaps not quite as nutty as me, not a fanatic who had devoted his life to sport, but a fellow nutter nevertheless. Thus, we immediately got along together like a house on fire, and within a week I was appointed to the role of script consultant at the prodigious sum of £500. Colin was still in the early stages of his research on the film, which was the product of someone called David Putnam, the head of a film company called Enigma Productions. The central themes of the film would be the anti-Semitism endured by Abrams at Cambridge University and Little's refusal, on religious grounds, to compete in the Sunday final of the Olympic 100 metres. In the case of Abrams, I had the advantage of knowing him, as he had in effect been my previous employer when I was a national athletics coach. Abrams, who died a couple of years earlier, had been a member of a privileged blazerati, a group who believed that they had been given by birth the divine right to rule British athletics. He was not, therefore, an immediately likeable character, and it would not be easy for Colin to make him one. And to my knowledge, Abrams, being Jewish, had not hindered him in reaching the ruling class of British athletics. Eric Little, on the other hand, he had the advantage of being a Scot. He was a man of totally different complexion. But I pointed out to Colin that he had not refused to compete for Britain in the 100 metres, simply had not been chosen by his country for that event in the first place. No, months before, Little had known that the 100-metre final would be on a Sunday, and as a devout Christian, he did not wish to compete on the Lord's Day. He'd instead, therefore, chosen to go for the two longer sprints, the 200 metres and the 400 metres. But I was to learn early in my role as script consultant that in the area of biographic feature film, writers tend to be free in their attitude to literal truth. All that was going to matter was that the characters of the two men were accurately portrayed within a plausible plot. And so I kept to myself my concerns about historical accuracy for the moment and let Colin get on with his research. And get on with it he did, and he soon came up against his first problem. Difficulties in securing the help of another medalist, Douglas Lowe, who had achieved gold in the Paris 800 metres. Colin never made clear to me what problems he was having with Lowe, but my reaction was immediate, and it was that we take him out of the plot. Because I felt that Lowe, being another gold medalist, might well take attention away from our two principals, Abrams and Little. Colin should therefore create a lighter, aristocratic contrast to our two principals, and I therefore suggested the fictitious Lord Lindsay. I chose for him the 400-metre hurdles as his event, not because it echoed Lord Burghley's later achievement in Amsterdam in 1928, but because I felt that it might be possible for me to train an actor in an event with such modest technical demands. These were ones which could be made even more modest by taking the hurdle down by 6 inches. After all, no one in the audience could possibly notice. We were by now into mid-1979. It was now time for me to meet Putnam and the film's director, Hugh Hudson. Hudson, an old Etonian, seemed to me to have arrived from some distant planet. David Putnam, on the other hand, he was quite different. Deriving from a more modest background, he made no similar display of effortless superiority, having navigated his way through the demanding world of commercial films. And I was soon to find Putnam to be a leader of quite a different calibre from those like Harold Abrams, whom I had encountered in athletics. We all came together in mid-1979 for the first time at a Piccadilly club, and it was at this point that Putnam asked if I might extend my role and act as a sort of a technical director. This would mean choosing the actors for the physical roles, training them, then making certain that the film's athletic sequences looked real. For although athletics would occupy less than a tenth of the running time, it lay at the very heart of the film. If therefore its portrayal failed to convince, then no one would have much interest in the other 2 hours. And so it was back to the script. I had been for weeks boring the pants off Colin with my yarns about the famous New Year Powder Hall professional sprint in Edinburgh, and he now suggested that we have a little run in it. No, I replied. The issue of his amateur status would have prevented that. But, I suggested, why not have us introduce Little in a Highland Games, deep in the heather and the hills? Colin immediately agreed and inserted a new scene. But more of that later. So now let's move on to October 1979 and to a sodden cinder athletic track in Putney and 31 shivering actors standing before me, awaiting my commands. Alas, there was a significant lack of muscle on display, for those were the days long before health clubs and rippling abdominals. It was therefore not perhaps a surprise that several of my prospective Olympians were sick during the warm-up. "Remember, Tom," said David Putnam, "we'll go by your choice, so just give us the ones that you think you can make into athletes." Easier said than done, unless I had suddenly acquired the powers of a gypsy Petulengro, because it was impossible to predict how an actor's muscles might respond to training in sprints and hurdles, with hamstrings ever ready to twang, and sensitive Achilles tendons just begging to become inflamed. So this was surely going to be a shot in the dark. Nevertheless, after an hour and a half in the freezing cold, I had chosen two actors, Ben Cross and Ian Charlson, for the main roles, and another four for the supporting parts. David Putnam smiled. "Those were exactly the two men that we wanted, Tom. I really don't know how you did it." Neither did I. Thus, in November 1979, with 6 months to go to the 1924 Olympic Games in Paris, I set about training six actors who had never in their lives taken part in athletics, not only to compete, but to convince an audience that they were athletes, and to coach two of them to win Olympic gold medals.
In part two, Tom starts to turn those professional actors into skilled athletes.